Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victims advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
And we were talking before we went on the air about potential themes for today's show, because I am an English teacher and themes are things that I love. And so we did settle on a theme for today's episode.
We did. What's the theme?
We decided that we wanted to focus on the idea of families taking legal action in the form of, say, lawsuits or various legal maneuvers in order to receive the justice that they feel they deserve. How's that for a theme? Did that work out?
That worked out very well, Ms. Dilley.
I keep trying to remind my students that theme isn't just a word, it's a sentence. So I tried for a sentence there.
I'm not sure I completely follow.
People will be like, oh, the theme is anger. And I'm like, no, that's too broad. Like, theme needs to be a little bit more specific than that.
This is a podcast where we talk about developments in true crime.
Yes.
We interview a lot of people in true crime. And there were some news stories that we wanted to discuss in some significant cases. Then, as we were going through them this morning, a theme emerged.
Yes, we realized there was a through line for all of this, and that seems to be justice via the court system, as necessarily opposed to arrests and various other things. So we have three specific stories that we want to talk about that are related to crimes that probably most of you are familiar with. There's certainly things that we've talked about before, and the way that these families are seeking justice through the court system. So we'll go ahead and start with one that I think, if you haven't heard of this case already, you've probably been living under a rock for the last couple of years. And that is the case that I think everybody refers to it as the Adnan Syed case. But right at the moment, it is the Heyman Lee case, because Adnan Syed, his conviction has been vacated in the murder of Heyman Lee. Fortunately, while we are very happy that Adnan is now free, if it turns out that he has been wrongfully convicted and in jail for 25 years, unfortunately, that does mean that the Lee family is left with no answers as to who murdered Heyman Lee. And it also means that they have had to go through this trauma a second time of realizing, okay, not only do we not know who her murderer is, but they also were, it appears, badly neglected by the criminal justice system as they went through this process of very quickly vacating the conviction of Adnan Syed. And I know, Bill, this is something that, as a family member of a crime victim, this is something that I know you feel very strongly about. The family's being treated fairly and correctly by the criminal justice system.
In this example, the decision of prosecutors to vacate Adnan Syed's sentence, which we totally support.
Yeah,
absolutely. We were just shocked at how offhandedly Heyman Lee's family was treated. It was like it didn't even occur to them to involve the Heyman Lee family in at least discussions or notice that this was coming. Heyman Lee's brother commented that they received essentially no notice that this was going to happen. It isn't, I think, that they were necessarily going to object. For them, they have been led to believe that Adnan Syed was responsible for her death all those years ago. And now they're being hit with new information, which I think has led us to the truth, or at least part of the truth. But to not even give them a proper heads up that this was coming and that Mr. Syed's sentence had been vacated and that he was going to be released from jail, even though I think it was the right thing to do, it was so badly handled. It didn't occur to anybody to reach out to the victim's family to let them know that this had happened.
So I'm going to quote from a really excellent Rolling Stone article here. And the quote comes from the Lee family's attorney, Steve Kelly. Now, Heyman Lee's family has requested an evidentiary hearing with regard to Syed's exoneration, which, again, we support. We're glad of this. We just don't want the Lee family to be left out in the cold. The Lee family is claiming that prosecutors treated them in a, quote, callous and unconstitutional manner, end quote, when they were not given enough notice to appear at the hearing of Syed's conviction being vacated. I think it was something ridiculous. Like, they had maybe 30 minutes notice for him. We're talking about Hay's brother, to get onto a Zoom call to appear at this hearing. When I heard that, I was absolutely aghast. Rolling Stone continues to report, again, according to the Lee family attorney, Steve Kelly, that a public evidentiary hearing in a motion to vacate is required, and that allows the family the chance to examine the evidence and raise questions. That hearing was not held. And according to Steve Kelly, their attorney, this, quote, shut the Lee family out from any meaningful involvement or engagement with the record, end quote.
We support the sentence of Adnan Syed being vacated. We think that's the right thing. Why are they not even thinking about the fact that the victim's family needs proper notice and some level of participation? Even if they were to say, we think this is wrong, I'm not sure they would necessarily say that, but I think most people, myself included, would only want to see a guilty party go to jail. I think it would be heartbreaking if you ever had any doubt that the person who was charged in your loved one's murder, for example, was incorrect. That's just compounding tragedy of your own loss by destroying the life of someone who has perhaps had nothing to do with your loved one's murder. To not involve them in the process, this begins to make me think of the Epstein case down in Florida, where the victims received no notice whatsoever that they'd been sold down the river by the Department of Justice.
Exactly. Now, the attorney for the Lee family was very quick to say they aren't looking to reverse that decision. Like, they're not looking to have him rearrested. They're not looking to put him back in jail. But he did say quite eloquently, all this family ever wanted was answers and a voice. Today's actions robbed them of both. And that is so important for these families to have. And now Adnan Syed and his family have had both of those things. They now have answers as to what went wrong and why he was wrongfully convicted. And Adnan has definitely had a voice through the podcast Serial, through Rabia Chaudhry's podcast Undisclosed, and through every other podcast that has covered this case. Which is a lot. Yeah, absolutely. There's also Rabia's book, Adnan's Story. Adnan has definitely had his story told, and we are very supportive of the fact that he has been able to tell his story, because ultimately it led to this. But the Lee family, I think, has been very badly overlooked. And in fact, the Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, defended her decision not to give the Lee family more notice of Adnan's conviction being vacated. She says, and this really made me angry, she notified the family, but could not wait for a response before moving forward. She said, justice delayed is justice denied.
Wow, that's pretty rich. I generally like Ms. Mosby, and I appreciate the work that she does, but to throw that back in their face, I'm sorry, that's really inappropriate. Of course we want to get Mr. Syed out of jail, and the man appears to have suffered enough. What do you mean not wait for a response? Her brother says they got 30 minutes notice. This is outrageous. Like, they couldn't have contacted them. I don't even understand what Marilyn Mosby's saying. They could have contacted them weeks before and said, look, there's something coming here.
Yes.
You need to prepare yourself for that. There's no thought whatsoever to the victim and her.
And we are familiar with that concept of justice delayed is justice denied. Our friends over at Real Crime Profile have said that for years and years. That is something that we believe as well. Let them respond. Give them another half hour, an hour, 2 hours.
Come on.
It really upset me that she would say that to them.
This thing, the release, didn't come about in a half an hour. I'm sorry. I'm going to push back here, Kristen. I don't think a few hours is enough. They were working on this for weeks, if not months. They could have told the family, this is coming. We are working out the details, but you need to prepare yourselves. And they didn't do that. And I don't know what Marilyn Mosby is thinking. This is outrageous. And for her to throw back, justice delayed is justice denied, that's pretty rich.
No, I agree. And it did bring up for me a lot of questions about what are the families of crime victims owed by the criminal justice system? How should they be treated? And the answer is not like this. They should not be treated like this. This was horrible for the Lee family. Now, what is already a really painful and horrible situation, having your loved one murdered, is only compounded by being treated this way by the criminal justice system that A, got it wrong in the first place, and B, is now running roughshod over their feelings. I'm just appalled.
Just for clarity's sake, because somebody will probably jump on us for what I just said a moment ago, I want to be clear here. I'm not implying that Mr. Syed should have stayed in jail 1 minute longer than he did while waiting for answers. Marilyn Mosby's office could have reached out to him and Lee's family earlier. I don't want to say that Adnan should be rotting in jail any longer than he did. The whole thing is a complete miscarriage of justice. But that agreement to release him from jail, which was the right thing to do, they were working on that for weeks, if not months. They could have let him and Lee's family know. So I don't want to be misunderstood that I'm implying that Adnan should be sitting in jail a minute, an hour, or a day longer than he did. Of course you want to get him out of jail as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Particularly when you realize we ignored other suspects. We missed significant steps that should have been taken in this investigation, which may have identified other potential suspects in Haman Lee's death. There's just no way around the fact that the prosecutors and the decision to vacate, those decisions were percolating and working their way through the system. Haman Lee's family could have received appropriate notice. And I think it's outrageous. And I feel like they, and even she, have been forgotten in all of this.
You can't forget the victim in this case. It does feel at times like the fervor in let's get Adnan released, which again, we are fully supportive of. We don't want anybody to mistake us on that. It just feels like the fervor means that Haman Lee and her family are left behind. It's got to be an awful feeling for them. I do want to quote from the state's attorney's office. The state's attorney said, quote, our office truly empathizes with the family of Haman Lee. which is why all along we've attempted to keep them apprised of each step of the legal process. As we've already conveyed to the victim's attorney, we remain committed to offering counseling services, detailing our investigation, and keeping open lines of communication with this family who have clearly been re-victimized by the misdeeds of prior prosecutors. I call a little bit of bullshit on some of that statement.
I appreciate the sentiment, and I hope
they are trying
to provide the Lee family with the resources that they mentioned. But proper notice, it just didn't happen in this example. If the Lee family is to be believed, then I believe them.
No, I agree. And it sounds too like open lines of communication with this family. I call bullshit on that one too.
Yeah.
Because as you said, legal decisions like this one take weeks, if not months. At the very least, they could have done them the courtesy of saying, hey, something's coming.
We're working on this. Steve Kelly, the attorney for the Lee family, did make it very clear. They're not objecting to Adnan's release from jail, not in the least. They're just saying it would have been nice if somebody had kept them informed.
Yeah.
And that clearly has not happened.
They have questioned the decision to vacate based on the evidence that is provided by the state. If you haven't been apprised of the investigation and the intent to vacate thus far, I can see why you would want to say, can I see the evidence? Let me again quote from Rolling Stone here. Baltimore State's attorney Marilyn Mosby stated that the evidence which allowed for the conviction to be vacated was a Brady violation. We've all heard that term. On the part of the prosecution, they failed to turn over evidence which showed alternative suspects. Steve Kelly argues the physical evidence of those claims, such as two notes from a prosecutor saying someone close to Syed had a motive for killing Lee and had threatened her, should be entered into the court record. We want to see actual evidence, Kelly tells Rolling Stone. You can't keep it secret and say, trust us. You have to have an open public hearing if you're going to take away a jury verdict that's over 20 years old. They make a good point. The reporting emphasizes a number of times they are not looking for a reversal of this. They're not looking to have Adnan rearrested, put back in jail, but they are saying, we want clarity, we want fairness, and we want to be able to see what it is that caused this vacation of the conviction to happen. And I can understand that coming from the point of view of the family who are now having to deal with the idea that they don't actually know who killed Haman Lee. I can see why they would want transparency in the process. I do get it. Clearly, there will be further developments as this case continues to move forward, and we will keep you apprised on that as decisions continue to be made. We also wanted to speak about another interesting judicial outcome on a case that we covered already earlier this year. In January, which feels like 100 billion years ago as opposed to nearly 12.
You mean January 2022?
Yeah, January 2022. It feels like we've been in this year forever.
It does seem like a million years ago.
It really does. We covered in an episode titled Malcolm X Exoneration, we covered the exoneration of Khalil Islam and Muhammad Aziz, who were exonerated after many years of being wrongfully convicted for the murder of Malcolm X in New York City in 1965. If you missed our coverage on that case, please do go back to our January 17th, 2022 episode and give it a listen. And it does cover all of the information about the wrongful conviction of these two men in Malcolm X's murder. Funnily enough, New York City has decided to confer a $36 million settlement on Muhammad Aziz, who is still alive, and the estate of Khalil Islam, who is not. So the sum will ultimately be split between Mr. Aziz and the Islam estate. The way that the settlement broke down is New York City itself provided $26 million of the settlement. And that's because there seems to have been a bit of malfeasance on the part of the New York Police Department. And then the state of New York threw in $10 million for the settlements. And I'm going to go ahead and quote from David Shannies, who is the lawyer for both men. These settlements acknowledge Muhammad Aziz and Khalil Islam's innocence and unconscionable violations of the law by police and prosecutors sworn to uphold it. The damage caused by wrongful convictions can never be undone, but we owe it to history and to the people whose lives were destroyed to face the truth and try to make amends. The payouts serve as another public mea culpa for the combined 42 years that Aziz, 84, and Islam, who died in 2009, served in prison before prosecutors admitted to making a tragic mistake. The pair was exonerated in November after a jury previously found them guilty of participating in Malcolm X's 1965 assassination on the stage of Manhattan's Autobahn Ballroom. And that is from the New York Times, who did an excellent article about this.
What a tragedy that police and prosecutors in New York got so much wrong here in the assassination of Malcolm X and ended up ultimately charging the wrong people. There's been a lot of reporting over the last couple of years that the New York City Police Department and the FBI had some advanced warning that there had been threats made against Malcolm X's life. He was clearly a very controversial figure and highly criticized by law enforcement, including the NYPD and the FBI, as well as his own, I think, rivals is the right word.
Yes.
Within the movement. That were highly critical of him and actually were actively making threats that he might be killed. It appears that NYPD and the FBI did not do enough to convey the seriousness of those threats to the Nation of Islam and to Malcolm X's security detail.
The settlement ultimately was reached and announced on October 31st. We are thrilled that there has been some restitution done in this case for these two men who very clearly suffered at the hands of the FBI and the NYPD and were sent to jail for a crime they just did not commit. So we do continue to wish them well, both Mr. Aziz, who is still alive, and Mr. Islam's family, who continues to deal with the fallout from this. We are pleased that this has worked out in their favor.
Sadly, in terms of the pursuit of justice, 57 years have transpired since Malcolm X was murdered, and many of the people involved have passed on. Mm. And of course, as we've seen in the Colonial Parkway murders at the 36-year mark, it becomes increasingly challenging to get to the truth of something which has a lot of layers to it. Memories have faded, people have passed.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to see that we would ever get to the bottom of what truly happened that day at the Audubon Ballroom.
And I do want to make sure that we shout out our friends at the Innocence Project, because this is one of their cases. And so bravo to the folks at the Innocence Project for doing the work that they did that ultimately led to the exoneration and to this settlement as well.
You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We're back here at Mind Over Murder. Another case that we covered is the tragic murder of Vanessa Guillen, who was serving in the United States Army at Fort Hood, a troubled Army base if there ever was one.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And you may recall that Vanessa Guillen disappeared in 2020 and later was found murdered. It turned out that she had been sexually harassed by a senior officer at Fort Hood. There was a very sad pattern at Fort Hood of sexual harassment and violence directed towards both women and men. Ultimately, her disappearance and murder launched a movement. And thousands of different service members came forward to describe what they had also experienced regarding rape and other sexual trauma in the military. the social media hashtag I am Vanessa Guillen ended up being a very powerful tool. Her tragic murder and her case have ended up now being covered in a new Netflix documentary, which is called I Am Vanessa Guillen. This Netflix documentary has ended up being really popular, and as a matter of fact, CBS News reports that I Am Vanessa Guillen was among the top title searches in the United States, which is an indication that people here are interested in the case. I look forward to seeing the documentary.
Yes, me too.
The way the story transpired, she was very close with her family. She was an Army private serving at Fort Hood, and then her family became very concerned because she spoke to them regularly, and then all of a sudden she went radio silent. They couldn't figure out what had happened to her. So she was missing for 2 months. Approximately 2 months later, her body was discovered off base. She was killed by a fellow soldier named Aaron Robinson, who you may recall, he had fled the base. And then when the Army investigators were closing in on him to ask him questions, he shot himself. He committed suicide while they were outside making their way into questioning him. And then it came out that second suspect, who was the wife of a former Fort Hood soldier, she was also involved in this gruesome cover-up. She had helped defile Vanessa's body and bury her off base, and she knew where the body was buried. It was just a horrible case. It turned out that Fort Hood, which, as I mentioned at the top, is a very troubled United States Army base with terrible management, had a pattern of this sexual harassment. She had gone to her superiors to report this man for sexually harassing her. They did nothing. So she ended up being incredibly frustrated by her whole experience. The only positive, I think, that might come out of this is that so many other women and men came forward and said that they had suffered similar abuses at military bases across the country. Her sister, Myra Guillen, her oldest sister, told CBS News that she had no idea the military had a history of problems with sexual assault and harassment. For what it's worth, I can say that in the United States Navy, during my sister Kathy Thomas's time on the USS L.Y. Speer, there were a series of rapes and sexual assaults aboard that submarine tender, which was homeported in Norfolk, Virginia. At that time, women could not serve aboard combat ships. They could only serve aboard support ships like the Speer. So while women were not serving aboard aircraft carriers and destroyers and nuclear submarines and other frontline ships, they were serving aboard these support ships. And according to women that I've spoken to who served aboard the Speer, there were a series of rapes on board the Speer and other Navy ships in that support role. And the Navy did nothing, absolutely nothing.
As soon as I saw this article this morning, and keep in mind, it's a Saturday morning. I'm a tired teacher. My eyes are barely open. I'm just mindlessly scrolling through my news feed this morning. And I saw that and suddenly I was wide awake and I was like, oh, I have to send this to Bill because it is checking so many boxes here. Not just the Vanessa Guillen case, which we had covered at the time that it occurred, but also I immediately went to Kathy, because I know this is of major concern and it is something that we have looked into with regard to Kathy and any potential links to the U.S. Navy and her murder. So as soon as I saw this, I was like, sending it to Bill. Here we go. This is something we need to see. And I know that this has rang a couple of bells with you this morning.
It did. And what saddens me is that the Naval Investigative Service, now called the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, seemed to have plenty of resources to investigate my sister Kathy's sexuality involving 9 agents over a 6-month period in 1984, 2 years prior to her death, but no resources to investigate sexual assaults, including brutal rapes, aboard these ships. What apparently was a priority for them in the 1980s was trying to find as many Navy and Marine Corps personnel, women, to kick out of the service for being lesbian, but no resources whatsoever to look into sexual assaults. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that Kathy Thomas's Naval Service has a strong tie-in to her murder. She was murdered a couple of months after she left the United States Navy. I know we talk about the Colonial Parkway murders as being potentially related, and they are. You cannot rule out the possibility that Kathy Thomas's Naval Service led directly to her murder just a couple of months after she got out of the United States Navy. I've also recently discovered that Kathy died a few weeks after a major insurance policy had lapsed. There is a service person's insurance policy which pays out if you're killed while on active duty. And typically this would go to the parents or husband, wife, partner of the service person. And that coverage lasts for 90 days after you leave active duty. Interestingly, Kathy's major insurance policy lapsed just a few weeks prior to her death, which I find to be a very interesting, I'll call it a coincidence, although I am so past believing in coincidences in the Colonial Parkway murders at this point. In the Vanessa Guillen example, as I mentioned, worthwhile things that came out of this case were that other people stepped forward and told their stories. And a United States Senator from New York, Kristen Gillibrand, was very involved in this case. The Guillen family has filed a $35 million lawsuit against the United States government, and that was filed in August. They have not reached a settlement yet. Natalie Kawam, who's their attorney, says they're aggressively pursuing this, and there's a lot of people that are supporting them. Her sister Myra, whom I mentioned a moment ago, is actually thinking about running for Congress now, which is an interesting development, but she wants to be part of the solution, if you will. And they've established a foundation, the I Am Vanessa Guillen Foundation. They're also supporting a new proposed law, which I'm very interested in learning more about. We'll be doing some research on this one. It's called the Sexual Harassment Independent Investigations and Prosecutions Act, or SHIP, H-I-P. And I've read a little bit about it, but I'd like to do more research. They're proposing that investigations of sexual harassment be moved outside the chain of command in the military, because clearly there are breakdowns of how these investigations should be pursued. It's a little bit like asking an agency to investigate itself.
There's
insufficient independence in terms of the internal law enforcement. I put kind of air quotes around that. Agencies like the NCIS from being able to properly investigate allegations of sexual harassment. I want to learn more about this. And Senator Gillibrand is very involved in that. They have already successfully passed the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act, which became law in December 2021. So they've made significant strides. We're very supportive of what they're trying to do. Obviously, the Guillen family receiving a settlement in a case like this is not going to bring Vanessa back.
Right.
And it's rough justice at best. It is sometimes how losses like that of Private Guillen are at least acknowledged by the persons responsible for failing to investigate her original allegations of sexual assault, which led directly to her murder.
Exactly. It is certainly not something that the family is doing for the money. It seems like it is the best response that you can hope for under the circumstances, as you said, of having a body acknowledge, hey, we screwed up here. We didn't investigate this properly. It's not an answer. It's definitely not that dreaded word that we both hate, closure. And it's not exactly justice either. It is something. It's acknowledgement at best. I think that in something like this, it is the best that the family is going to be able to get from the government. And I love the fact that they are strongly advocating to make changes to laws and to work on the institution from the inside. Because you're right, the idea of we're going to have the military police sexual harassment in the military, really?
It's not working.
It's not working. Of course it's not working. As you said, it goes back, of course, to your sister's career. And I'd imagine this is something that has been endemic to the military for as long as the military has been in existence and men and women have worked together. Probably even before then, I would imagine that there's been harassment of some kind or the other ever since the military's inception. Clearly, the military policing itself is not working. So I think that it's great that they are doing this kind of advocacy to make people aware, not only should this not be happening, but the military should not be policing itself. It's just not effective. Clearly, it's not. And whatever has gone wrong at Fort Hood, and I'm sure that there are a multitude of things, it's clearly proof of the fact that the military can't do its job policing itself. And I'm not trying to pick on the military here specifically and solely. I'm sure that there are any number of organizations who are trying to police themselves that should not be and are doing it ineffectively. But in this case, it's pretty clear things had gone wrong at Fort Hood and nothing was being done about it.
I'll venture a guess here that millions of American women have served in the military over the years. And from what we've heard from those women and men as well, hundreds of thousands of them have likely suffered harassment in the various branches of the service. So I'm talking about the Army, the Navy, Air Force, Marines, and Coast Guard. They've all had very serious sexual harassment scandals. And I think a very small sliver of those women that were harassed have ever come forward. I know a number of years ago when I made inquiries of about 15 classmates of my sister Kathy's from the class of 1981 at the United States Naval Academy, a number of them told me that they had been brutally harassed while serving in the military. I think your point about asking the Army or other branches of the service to police themselves is clearly not working. That needs to be fixed, which is why the proposed Sexual Harassment Independent Investigations and Prosecutions Act sounds like a step in the right direction. And I'm interested in learning more about the SHIP Act as we go forward.
We will continue to keep you all informed on these cases specifically, as well as other issues. We are pleased on the part of all of these families that they are being heard through the criminal justice system, the court system especially, and we will continue to keep you apprised of any and all updates.
Stay tuned as we move through the balance of the year. We've got some very interesting interviews coming up. We look forward to heading into the holiday season with all of you enjoying time at home and perhaps a little extra time to listen to your favorite podcasts.
And we would encourage you, while you are listening to your favorite podcasts, which of course we are one of, please take the time to leave us ratings and reviews on all of your various podcast channels. They do help other people to find us, and we are always looking for new listeners. So please do take the time to rate and review us. We really do appreciate it. That's going to do it for this episode of Mind Over Murder. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilley.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawl Space Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder.